On this tape, Henry Bremer recalls early farm techniques and practices. He tells stories of his boyhood on Potlatch Ridge and compares the local effect of the two depressions. As he grew up, he spoke mostly German, and this created some problems for him and his community during the First World War. He also talks about Roosevelt's farm program, the IWW, and starting his own farm.
When they was heading, well, they got started. Lots of it they hadn't cut when the rain came in August, and it just continued raining, and we'd stack it. You know, they just dump it in the stack, or just cut the heads off about that fur, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Then they come along with big dirt table and forks and fork it on there, and then they have a hold on to feed the machine. That's the way it went. So that year, every stack that hadn't been thrashed yet, why, it just all grew out. There was none in. They cut it. They took hay knives and cut it open and throwed the stuff all back, and they had a little in, maybe in the center, but that wheat was all just black. It just kind of burned when it got hot.
From the heat and the drying out?
Yeah,
what?
No, from the wetness. So it was all spoiled. The wheat just looked black, but I know we fed it to our chickens. I don't know if they've done them any good or not.
Well, how was that 1893 depression to get through anyway? Was that a rough one to get through?
Oh yes, that was a bad one. Of course, we figured we just forgot about money and stuff, and Father went out and he worked. We made a living. We get our meats and everything, beans or what they have, garden stuff and so on, and we raised garden stuff there. That was good. And flour and stuff, well, we get it from the farmers he worked for. No money. It'd just be something to eat. At least he kept his family going. And it wasn't only with us, it was everybody was doing the same thing. And, of course, we had a lot of game, prairie chickens. They were so thick. I used to go out hunting then already, and kid of 14 years old, practically. Well, I guess before that. And actually, when these stubble fields, they were in there, and they go up, you could just see the whole sky was full of them. You didn't have to aim, you just go ahead and pull the trigger and shoot into them, and here down they come. So, they were prairie chickens. Then everybody, I guess, got to using them, and all at once they were gone. There was none left, I guess. And the last ones I heard of, and I still believe there's a few of them, over on Cream Ridge, they claim, prairie chickens. But I haven't saw any for years. Then the blue grouse, they came in. They was awful thick in here. Well, we finally got rid of all of those. Disappeared. And of course we had deer. But nobody hardly ever went out hunting for those in there. Once in a while, one fella kill a deer right close to his home, because they were busy otherwise, but the prairie chicken and grouse we used to, and bet the brush pheasants, lots of them, which we still have back in the timbers. But that was it. We had my father had an old muzzleloader. You know what they are. And I used to load those things. Now, you had that ramrod, you pound down there, when you put the powder in it, and then put your wad of paper or stuff on top. You had to pound it down so hard so the ramrod jumped clear out on top, you see. And then you're shot, you just put in and just shove it down loose, you see, on it. So I used that gun till I farmed. And I had dogs. They had so many dogs, and they got in my bean field, and they romp all over the head. And I got mad at them one day, and so I grabbed the old shotgun, and I shoved another load into it, and there was one in there already. And, you know, I blazed the way of that dog, and that gun went clear up in there and flew clear back to me 12 feet, and it had a crack in it that long. It's a wonder it didn't explode altogether.
Well, using those guns, did you, since the shot was just packed loose, if you tilt the gun down, would the shot just roll out?
Oh, no, you put a wad in on top of
On top of the shot?
Yeah, of the shot, and then go ahead and just feed that, but didn't get, if you pound it down like you did, that gun would kick something terrific. So, fella had to, my dad, he learned me how to do that. He said not to ever get that shot down there like that, he says. It'll kick you, it'll knock you clear over.
Well, how do you think the 1893 Depression compared to the 1930 Depression?
Well, it was a lot harder with 1930, while we had everything here, plenty to eat, and there was some money there at least you could get to. It didn't amount to much, just like I told you, eggs, 7 cents a dozen, and butter. They could go ahead and they just put it up. They didn't have any molds or nothing. They put it up in great big chunks. And the stores would just cut off and what they want from them. So that's the way we used to put it up, but finally we had to quit it because the laws wouldn't allow it anymore. But butter, same way, we wouldn't hardly get anything for it. But. We was on the farm there. Well, now you take our cream. We milked 9 cows there, and have a 5-gallon cream every once in a while, and we send it down with the mail carrier. He could carry that stuff, and we'd get about $1.50 to $2 for a whole can of cream like that. That was all. Well, that was at least we got some money now in 1893. We didn't get that. There was no money. They just didn't have any. And those who did have it, they kept it so tight that it didn't get out in the country. At least the stores, I suppose, and places they had to have a little, but we never saw any of it. Because at the 30, 29, 30, and 31 there, it took a lot of farmers. They went broke, lost their places. But practically, you take the Potlatch Ridge there, when we came here. Well, there were all the first settlers. They all disappeared. Every one of them sold out for a little or nothing. And they didn't make nothing here. I don't think there was hardly one that stayed until the second ones came in, and that's the ones that made it. Well, it happened the same way in Canada, same way in Montana. The first ones that got in there, why, they all went broke. But excepting I didn't. I got out in time and just by nip and tuck. Because we had a cycle in there, the years were good, but then they came. But they haven't gone back in places. In some places, they're making all right, but you take that guy to the last town we've seen. They haven't came back to this day.
That was in Montana?
Yeah.
Well, during the 93 Depression, did you quit school or anything to to help work and support the family?
When?
In 93.
Well, 93, yeah, I was only a kid. I was born in 81, so I was about 11, 12 years old, of course. I had to help work, sure. We had to do something, like I told you, we'd be in the flax field pulling weeds, or we'd be hoeing weeds for some farmer. I worked for 2 bits all day long, and then in that flax there, as kids, a whole string, maybe 8 or 10 of them, kids get in there. And they go through that flax field and pull the weeds, and we'd work from 7 o'clock till 6 at night. That was our... And we got 35 cents a day.
Did you get it in cash, or did you get it in...
Well, sometimes we'd take a trade. We want some meat, or maybe something else, fruit they had, and we'd take that. But otherwise, we get some in cash, but we wouldn't see any of us, the kids. The parents, they take that. We wouldn't know how to spend money. Well, we didn't have a chance to spend it. We had a store there, yes, but kept the little stuff, little groceries and stuff in the post office. That was all, so. But we didn't know, all we knew about if we could get a little bit of candy, and we generally got that when we took the eggs and butter to Leland there, and we get a nickel's worth of candy between us. There was two and three of them, the girls, and then us two boys. We'd go and we'd carry the eggs and butter down there.
What did you do for fun as a kid?
Huh?
What did you do for fun in those days?
There was no fun there. Like, we'd get together just in our immediate neighborhood. Because we had no way of getting out unless we walked, sure. But we never mixed with the kids downtown here and so on. Kendrick was strange down to us as kids. We just didn't get there enough. If I did get there, I'd be scared to death. I stick right on the father's wings because I didn't mix with no kids. And we, not in our neighborhood, but we did it together, that was all there. And we had a little we played baseball and us big kids and so on, and that was about. But getting out as far as seeing anything, like circuses or shows or something like that, there was no such thing.
Well, were you scared to go to Kendrick because it was a rough town, or just because it was a town at all?
I didn't like the kids. They knew so much more and were too smart for me, I thought. And I just kind of ducked out. You know, we didn't mix. If it was in our neighborhood, the ones we know, we was fine. We get along all right, but we take it from down there. I know we went down one time, down on the creek. We used to go fishing in Potlatch there. And we got clear into Kendrick, and then the kids came in there. And, boy, they got awful smart. They was going to lick us, you know. Boy, since that time, I wouldn't go near them.
Well, did they lick you, or did you get away?
No, we got away. But they was ready. There was one of them especially. It was a Christian kid, I believe they called him. And he wanted to fight us. He wanted to beat us up. I got scared of him. No, we just didn't have any way going around. We never had a team of horses till I went to farming, and I bought 2 head of horses. But we couldn't make anything at farming either, because slow as it was, with a foot burning, you know, you didn't. Still, I plowed for a little ground. I had hay. I some hay ground. I seed that, and the wild oats took the wheat, so I mowed it and baled it up and hauled it to Kenrick for $9 a ton. Well, that was pretty good money at that those days. But you had to pay $2 or $2.50 for baling it a ton. And then your wheat had run over all the way from 50 to 70 cents. That's about the price we got for it. We saw worse prices during the Depression then. I sold wheat for 21 cents.
During the second Depression?
Yeah, in 30. 29, 30 there. That's when we went back in the hole. I lost. I was farming pretty good and big then already. And I lost $750. It was good money.
How?
Yeah. That hurt.
How did you lose that?
Crop didn't pay out. 21 cent wheat and so on. We used to have kids hoeing in the beans. And we paid those $1 or $1.50 a day, and so on. We kept it going. We were starting to get along pretty good there. So from 21 on till the Depression hit, and then of course it caught lots of farmers short, and no price, absolutely nothing. If we'd had a little of this $5 bushel of wheat now, why, we'd been all right, but we didn't. I had a big crop. Today, if I'd have sold that crop today, what I had there that year, I'd have got $25,000 for it. So, and here I run $750 a mow. It just didn't work out. But I made it. We skimped along. That's when Delano Roosevelt got in, old Franklin Beaton, and he finally put the prices back up pretty well, and the farm program got in, and I took for that. I worked in that for 9 years in the program, but it got into politics, got away from it. The big man took all of it again. Because you take the big farmers at that time, good grief, look at the money they got out of the government. But you take the small farmers, well, we didn't get much out of it. But when the politics, when Washington took over, I finally quit in 40, I think I quit in 41. 42. That's all the 42 I got out of it. And I said, it's a regimentation for me. I said, that's the way it looks to me. I said, we're just dictated to exactly what to do and we can't say nothing. Washington used the pencil. It went all into politics. That's generally the way it goes, though, with anything the government takes hold of. The thing generally runs in the hole. It's too much money.
Why was it that your folks decided to leave Austria? Huh? Why was it that your folks decided to leave Austria?
No, we were Germany. We were
Germany.
Germany. Well, I don't know. I was a year old, but I suppose Father saw no chance. In Germany at that time, and still is that way, if there is a son, the older one inherits the whole place. The rest of them got to see how they get along. And that's the way it was there. Well, then the rest of them, they just had no future there. They have nothing to go on. So they all started for America, because it took us 14 days to get across, they said. We was on the ship 14 days. And they it isn't like today. They start off in the morning here and they're in London by night or anything like that. Well, we couldn't figure that out, that anything like that could happen, but it did.
Did your folks ever tell you any stories about, or do you remember anything about the passage across?
No, they just told us that they was on 14 days on the boat and so on. And I tell you, as far as knowing anything about Germany, they never told us. I don't remember whether my father had any relatives there or not. They just didn't say. My mother had. She had some sisters and brothers there. And she told her name. She used to write to those. Well, we knew those things. But we never saw them. We never. It was quite an undertaking for those there to go into a country that they didn't know or anything and take off and come over here, you know. And so we didn't get the best of it because we landed in Hanover. I don't know how long we stayed there. I can't remember that. But I know August, my brother, was born there.
Where?
August, my brother.
No, where did you land?
He passed on.
Where did you land?
In Hanover, Kansas. And I was born in Hanover, Kansas, and my brother was born in Hanover, not in Germany, and I was, or he was born in Kansas, in Hanover, too. Same name. So I talked to a fellow the other day when I went to town having a haircut. I was sitting in the car, and boy, I get lots of company then, old timers. So he want to know. He says, I heard you landed in Hanover, Kansas. He says, that was my hometown. And so on. And he was there, and he want to know if I knew anything. I says, I don't know nothing about Hanover. I said, I landed there when I was a year old, and I says, I think we went out there in a year or two, and I said, so I don't remember anything.
Well, was it near Hanover that you lived in the dugout?
No, I lived in Western Kansas. That was when my father homesteaded and took a preemption. We could take a half section that way. So that's what he did. Well, that's when we lived in the dugout. We had a cellar, chicken house, and our own dwelling place, all dugout. The whole thing right along the bank. So I can remember that. That's when I start to remember things.
When you moved out from Kansas, were there a bunch of people that moved with you at the same time?
Well, no, not there. They came out there first, Myers, and then, yeah, there was a few of them my father knew. They came out from Germany too. And they homesteaded out there, and then they wanted him to go, and that's why we got out there. I don't remember whether there was any of them there. But in Western Kansas, when we moved out of there, we was there 8 years, I guess, probably. So then there was lots of those people that had asked us to come over in there. They moved out already. They starved out. We hung out probably quite a little bit longer than they did, but her folks moved out, well, it was in 92, roughly 2 years before we moved out. But father, they wrote to him to come out here and sell his place. And he didn't want to. He thought, I want to see, he says, I got into a bad mess here in Western Kansas, I'm going to see what it is. So he came out here a year before that and left us in Western Kansas, his family. And so when he saw what was going on here and everything, how what they could raise here, and so on, and like the climate and everything. So here we come, the next spring. But we didn't like the hills. We were scared of. Mother, she wouldn't go. When she got up on top of the hill, she says, I'll never go back to Kendrick. So, but after a while, it was nothing. She went many a time. But the first time when we went up on that spare grate there, and this other one was washed out, she walked up all the way, and us kids did. We wouldn't ride on the wagon. We were scared to death.
Well, you settled in a colony that was pretty much a German town, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a German settlement. Same way in Western Canada, see. The Germans, they always, when they came from Germany, it was some of their relatives, and they all went in a German town. That's why I didn't get any schooling, because I couldn't talk English to amount to anything when I was 12 years old. And I learned it when after I got out here. We got to go on a month or two to English schools. And that's the way it was with all the Germans. They had their German school, and that we learned, of course. We was in school there. They had more religious instruction than anything else, but we learned the reading and our arithmetic and whatnot. They've had that, you know. So, no, but I should have known when I got to be 21, why it took me till in the 30s or 40s before I'd really catch up with it, you see, because we had to make our own way. We never got $1 from our folks because they were poor. And we had to dig out our own way. So, I think we've done pretty good.
During the war, was there much feeling against the German people because of the war with Germany?
Yes, yeah. First, yeah, the German people, well, that changed the whole thing then. The German schools and that happened out. And the children, they had started to learn English. They was all talking English practically then. But there were some of them, like her father, like, he still stuck to the German. He thought that was the only way. They were wrong on that, because actually, and we had to make our future. We should have gone to English school and learned there, and but we didn't. Didn't happen. But when that World War came, why then they start to preach German or English in our German, what they call the German church, you know. And so it finally went that German is all out. There's no such thing anymore. I believe there's a few southern states that they have it, they say. But we don't know about it here anymore. And we were pretty well grown up then when they finally all got to the English, and we really had to learn it all over. Got mixed with different people, the American people. We got their ways anyway. I always did fight for it, even when they had nothing but German there. I always said we should run to English too. So finally when we did and started, you know, boy, some of those old Germans, they were huffy. They had good ways, yes, but they shouldn't have, when they moved to this country, they shouldn't have stuck up that way for Germany.
Well, did anybody ever get in trouble for around the time of the war for sticking up for Germany?
No. Well, the people, they knew better then. They all shut up. We kids, we wasn't in trouble. Oh, there was some of them. They were rough to us, yes. They talk awful nasty about it. But we never had anything bad happen there. They did tear down the American flag up at Cameron there, that we had on our school there. And it was tore down and tromped or tore to pieces in the mud, and they blamed it that the Germans done it. Well, they didn't do it. I knew who practically done it. We found out that, you know, such things to get them into trouble, that happened. And then about Liberty Bonds, they got pretty nasty about that. It wasn't Liberty Bonds, it was, they forged it onto us. That was it.
What do you mean they forced Liberty Bonds on you?
Well, they just tell you had to buy so many. So, I had bought some. Before I got through with all of it, before the war got through, I had $1,200 worth of Liberty Bonds. And they told you that you had to buy so many. That's your quota. And if you don't buy, the government will take your clothes and your property and everything else. So some of them came around that way. I didn't get scared of them. I went to work and I talked to the judges and to the people down there. What about that? They says there's no such things. Don't listen to those people. They says they're just trying to make trouble. So I got out of it, but I took some Liberty Bonds. But then, after we had our Liberty Bonds, and cashed them in then afterwards, you got 80%. See? They cut you, the government to run them right down. We didn't get our money back. That was wrong, too.
That was the First World War or the Second?
First World War. The First World War. That was the one that done that. I went to work and I traded in some $250 in Montana for the oil that was digging for oil there. So I held those about 6 months and I made double on it. I got double back out of it. So I thought that was a pretty good deal. So a fellow told me that he knew of mine. I trusted him. I knew him for a long time and bought land and things. He says, I know you can make money on that. So I invested the whole thing in that again. I lost it.
Another mine?
Yeah. Different oil well. We were in the oil business. So I lost it. Because it didn't turn out. So I didn't gain anything there.
When you set yourself up in farming, what did you do? How did you go about it?
About what?
How did you go about setting yourself up in farming when you started farming here?
Oh, well,
you had some money from your land in
Montana?
Well,
I didn't have any money myself, but I had borrowed money or given to my people. I didn't borrow it. I didn't draw nothing this or not. $400 when I worked out. I paid off on the help, pay off on the paperwork. So by the time I got ready to farm, I had this $400 for the folks. Then when I went on the farm, they set me up, they gave me the money back, you see, so I could buy that. And that's where I bought my horses and machinery. And that's the way I got started. But
what kind of machinery did you buy?
Well, just a walking plow, a harrow, and a disc and what have you, a wagon and a buggy and I don't know what else there was. But we didn't have too much machinery then to harvest with. I had a mower, yeah. And I had a binder. I bought my binder, second-hand one. Well, it was, in fact, it was all practically second-hand. So that's the way I got started. But it's just like I told you, I think already once before, I farmed here 3 or 4 years before I went to Canada then. And I just came out even. I didn't make no money all those 4 years. No gain whatsoever. But I was in the business. That was like the nigger on the Missouri River. He paid so much on for hay on one side of the river, and then he ferried it across and sold for the same thing. And the fellow said, "You can't make money that way." "No, but I'm in business." So that was about the way it was with me. So in Montana, we stayed the first winter, we stayed at Moore, Montana. And we homesteaded. It was 40 miles out north of Moore. And we built us a tar roof house, 12 by 14 or 16, whatever it was. This was a tar roof. And
a roof of a car, Ellis?
Yeah, just like a car, you know, with these round, we'd say you put a 2x6 across there, and then you put a 2x8 or 10 in the center and bend your board and throw over it, you see, and then put tar paper over it. That's the house we had. So when we was ready to move out on the homestead, I had bought, my brother and myself, we bought 4 head of horses. I took the front wagon and a couple of big poles, set that house on there, that old shack, and let the poles, they was dragging behind. I only had it in front and the wheel, put the 4 horses on, and away I went across the prairie, 40 miles. I didn't make it the first day. I had to camp on the road. I had everything, little feed and everything in the house, so I could feed my horses. And when I got there at the homestead, there was little snow had fallen that night. And I didn't know exactly where the line was. So I pulled in there and I set that thing down. I said, "This must be it, right in here somewhere." And you know, after I saw, and when we moved out there, and after I saw, I got 3 feet over the line onto my homestead. If I had left it 3 or 4 feet the other way, I'd have been on the other side.
What would, when you were farming here in the early days, what would a usual work day be like?
Oh, you would about any time of the day. We had no hours like they do now, you know. The working man was not organized like he is now, you know. Because you take a farmer, if you hire for a farmer, I hired out here at Genesee, Germantown, to a farmer for $20 a month, and actually the goodness that man would stir you out at 4 o'clock. And he lets you get in that field there and he makes you stay with it till 7, 8 o'clock if you didn't stop. Well, I worked many times 12, 13 hours a day. That, we had no rules and regulation. That was the way the farmer wanted it and you just abide by it. Of course, I didn't stay with him too long. I guess I worked there from early in the spring till harvest time. And then I worked for his brother on the thrash machine. He had a thrash machine and was thrashing. So I worked for him. And then afterwards, I worked for him, General Farmer, the whole year round. But that man was just different than his brother. When 6 o'clock came, he said, "You throw those tugs there. Don't you go around another field, see?" He was just the opposite. He wouldn't let you get out until about 7 o'clock. 6, he quit. So I liked him so much better. But his brother, oh, he was an outlaw for that.
Did they ever try to organize the farm workers around here?
Oh, no. It never happened here. I tell you, the first organization that came into it, that was when the big factories and like the cars, railroads and so on, they started that. Farmers absolutely, they haven't got any organization to this day. Because they are trying it, but still there. It's too much money, the farmer does not hire. With these modern machinery he's got, you know, he can do so much more work than we used to, where we had to hire. Why, they don't now. There's some of them that hire year-round, but big farmers, but smaller farmers, they just can't afford to have a hired man. They can now with the prices they've got, I think.
Well, I was told that in some parts of the county, the IWWs came in and tried to organize
some of the
farm workers.
They tried awful hard. That was quite a layout there then, when they came in. So when the Roosevelt came in, well, he started the CC camps, you know. I don't think they were paying them too much, but at least they had a little work and could live. But I remember here in the woods, they tried to organize that, and you'd find gangs on the road there, and they'd stop you. It was getting up where we was getting cars, you know, and things. And they went to work and they'd stop you on the road and want to know where you're going and what you're going to do and so on, you know. And they want you to join and so on. I never paid much attention to it. It never was in the farming community. They didn't get in there. It was out in the timber company, these bigger outfits where there were railroads and so on. I can remember, I was in Colorado one year too. That was when I was a kid, 18 years old. And out there they told me I could make lots of money out there. Good wages and so on. So I went out there and when I got there, there was 160 men to one job. We all worked pressure all winter. I finally got a place on the ranch there and worked out for $20 a month. So on, then I went, as I sit there, I was going up to building the railroad from main line to Colorado. There was a sugar factory in there, and they had a 20 or 30 mile road to build. So I went up in that, went here, and I worked on that railroad. And I had, my mother had gave me blankets and quilts and stuff, you know, from our bedding. We had to carry that. We roll it up and away we go on our bikes and walk up and down the railroad track. So I worked for that railroad camp there. Got in there and I worked there 1 week and I got as loud as a pet coon. You had to turn the blankets every night, they said, so they wouldn't catch you right away, those bugs. My eyes just was as loud as could be. I had a friend there, he was that big. I left all my quilts, my blankets, my clothes I had, and I throwed everything off, went to town and took a bath and washed and bought all new stuff. Left, throwed everything away. And it took me about 2 months to get rid of them. So, yeah, that I say was that the laboring man should organize, because it was, why, they didn't treat you human for long. That's the way their railroad was at that time. So I say when these automobile factories and everything came in, it was time for them to, or they take advantage of you.
But the labor troubles then never really hit this part of the county then?
Huh?
The labor troubles never really hit this part of the county?
No, we never really had trouble here with it, because the farmers really didn't. They never hit us at all. It was for these big companies to organize. That's who labor there. And they had a right to. They didn't treat them right. The railroad, I know for one, is a bad one. You take when this road washed out here, the railroad, they got a bunch of men in here. They were all winos, a whole bunch of them. And you know, they'd work those people. It wasn't human, the way they treated them. They didn't get much hurt and so on, and they wasn't organized. And then I guess all they wanted is they could get a little wine and little things, that was all. And they just didn't. Until they got organized, that thing quit. And it was a good thing that the labor stepped up for that. But that's all gone now for you. I say we're going too far on the other side too. At least I see it that way.
Did you ever hear about an organization around here called the Farmers Union?
Well, there was unions, farmer unions and different things. But you know, the farmer never got organized. They'd have one of them, the farmers' grange and so on. Well, they really don't accomplish too much. It's more of a social get-together, to my notion, because we just never got too far on that. They want me to join the grange for my time. I guess my boys did. But as far as improving the labor, I don't think they have much. And the farming union. It was small groups that never got anywhere.
Well, the way I heard the Farmers Union was, one of the things they did was they were kind of they had a store that they ran where you could exchange stuff and get good prices on stuff.
Yeah. Well, they do buy. They still have. My boys have both of them are on the store down at Snake River now, where they buy cheaper. To have a kickback on it, you know. So, and that's about all. But as far as labor on the farm, there's no such thing. Because you can't go ahead and have labor work 8 hours a day and says, I'm through. I quit. The farmer can't stand that. When he's got his crop where he works for all year, whether it's 12 hours or it's 14, you've got to get in work. That's why he does it himself with this big machinery they've got now. And they can't use organized labor like that. I know, I had boys, when I stacked my beans, I was thrashing one Saturday night. And then they said they had organization to do it. So, when 6 o'clock came, I had a bottom of a beanstalk. Just left it, wouldn't take over an hour. Stuck down there hard and quick. Of course, they were home, kids. I told them, I said, boys, go ahead. I said, it looks like rain. I said, it'll all be a mess, so do this. They wouldn't move. So one of the brothers came up there. He's going to get that boy home that Saturday night. And boy, if he didn't go out, he made both of them work until it cleaned up. So he knew what farming was. But them two kids, they just figured, well, that's it. So that's the only trouble I ever had with farming at one time. And they were boys. I just figured they just going to show their authority, but they didn't agree with it. A brother of his, he was an older boy already, and he came and he said, get in, and he pitched in too. And he says, you take that fork down, put those beans through there, he says, I'll run this fork through there. So, so boy, they went right to work, cleaned it up at least. That's the only trouble I ever had with labor.
When you were out in Colorado, did you run across many hobos in that time? You said you were sort of hoboing around yourself.
Yes, there were hobos everywhere, tearing up dead and so on. And I tell you, it was pretty rough there.
In what way?
Well, you just couldn't get work, and you didn't have anything, I happened to get in with the family there that figured I was home to them, you know, and they took care of me mostly. Otherwise, I'd have starved to death, unless somebody helped me, because I was only 18 years old, and I went down to Walla Walla and started harvesting down there. They were earlier. Then came up with the Colfax and finally came over to Pullman and harvest, and then I said, coming home. So a fellow, he was from Colorado, and he said to me, you come on to Colorado. There's good jobs over there. I've been over there. So I took his word for it, but shucks, there were none. The first job we went to was on a rock quarry out at Moore, Montana. No, what was the name of that? I forgot the name. At least it was up there on the mountain. And when I got there, I looked like a young kid. They says, this work is too heavy for you. You can't do it. You can't use it. So they kicked me out again. I went back into Denver that night. And so the next day, I was sitting in the park there. I got out and looked around in the park. Here come a fellow from, he had a ranch out there, several miles from Denver. And he says, are you looking for work? I said, yes. But he says, I can use you, $20 a month. So I went out there. I worked that winter, and I got along fine. But the next spring, when I figured I was going out and make more money, why, sharks, you couldn't do it. There's too many men. Finally, I went to Longmont, Montana, and got into the brickyard. And we had to make 5,000 bricks a day. And I was off the area. We were drying in the fields, you see. I have three molds, what you call molds, three bricks, but they mold into it with the mud, just slap it in and cut it with the wire. Then I carry it on the field and dump it and have rolls there and let the sun dry them, and then we put them into the kiln and then we had to burn them, you see. So I made good there. I got $3.50 a day. So that was big money at that time. I got enough money to get home again, and I hit for home. But there was no organization of labor at all. Maybe in the great big cities back east, I don't know.
That was during the, kind of during the Depression times, wasn't it? Or was it between Depressions?
No, we was out of Depression, everything. It was normal years. But it was that way. We had hobos all the time. Now, we had hobos when we came down here in 41, where the boy lives, where he lives now. Why, we had hobos practically every day, coming in and ask for a sandwich or something, carrying a little bundle, bedding and so on. And there were people just shifting around all the time. Of course, we got into the war then, the Second World War, you see, and then things perked up again. We'd done pretty good, but I had quit farming. Werner was farming. Ernie had to go to war. Went in the Navy for over 4 years.
Well, was it the war that kind of brought the country out of that depression, you think? Or was it part of the country?
Well, in the first place, when the war was on, we got pretty good prizes. We come out of it again. You could farm. It wasn't too big. It wasn't nothing like the First World War. But at least...
Were there real good prices in the First World War?
Huh?
Were there real good prices in
First
World War?
Oh, yes. That was good prices. The way things went up, we couldn't believe it, you know. Where we were selling hogs for 2.5 and 3 cents a pound, live weight, while we got 6-8 cents, while we thought that was something terrific. Well, it was. But what we had been used to. And beans, they got up to 10-12 cents, such things. Well, wheat up a couple of dollars a bushel. Then, of course, after the war, everything went fooey. After 1918, when the war quit. And then dragged it down till the Depression struck there. See? And then we were in trouble again. Because I look for, I don't know, for this one, if it ever does crash, it's going to be rough. Because we're out of line with everything. Such thing as $5 a bushel for wheat and so on. And the labor, the way it is, you get one of them here for, you know, say, plumber or electrician or something like that. It's outrageous. You just can't afford it. Common people can't afford it. It's too much money. I always say they can't earn it. Now, you take plumbers, I suppose they charge $5-6 an hour.
They charge more than that?
Yeah, or maybe more than that. So, yeah, it's out of line. That thing, we're going to do like Germany, I feel, that our money won't be worth anything anymore. That's what's going to happen. And then look out, then the times will be hard. And we're not going to get anybody to help us like they did Germany. We went over there and we helped them out right away. And I look for it. I hope I won't see it anymore. It's out of line. Everything there is, it's out of line. But I say for the old folks, the Social Security has been an awful boost for the old folks. Otherwise, there have been old folks here that absolutely couldn't make it. Because nowadays, the children, they will not take care like we used to. The old folks, they used to stay in where the daughter was, if she got married or so on, the mother or father, whoever passed on, was the one that stayed there while he was taking care of the home. And my mother, she was 33 years for their daughter. And she didn't have no money. She couldn't go nowhere. She never went to a hospital. I don't know how often she had a doctor there, hardly any.
You think families in general were a lot tighter? And communities and groups and things were a lot more cooperative in the early days?
Yes. You take in a community. Now you take, my father died in 1913. He didn't have an undertaker. There were no such things. Mother's did. She died in 1946. Well, she had an undertaker. We sought for that. But it wasn't quite as rough as it is nowadays. Good grief. It costs you an awful lot for a funeral. But still, the law itself is not, you can go ahead and don't have to even. If you've got a doctor to say that that person is dead, you can go ahead and bury him wherever you want to, whether it's on your own land or what. Because the law can't stop at the train. Now, we used to, there's two children right in our place where we farm up there. Two children laying right on top of the hill. We don't know the graves anymore. We work over them, you see. There used to be picket fences around for a long time, but we find lots of people that have been buried over here. And when somebody had something like